From the Credit Union National Association, this is the CUNA News Podcast. Credit union people, credit union ideas.
I'm Ron Jules, senior editor with Credit Union Magazine. As CUNA's chief advocacy officer, Ryan Donovan, tells it, advocacy is a process. In 2019, America's credit unions will be building on a process that brought them nearly unprecedented success in 2018. To name just a few, CUNA's fierce 360-degree advocacy helped secure the passage of S-2155, the Economic Growth, Regulatory Relief, and Consumer Protection Act, protected the credit union tax status, ensured credit unions received $735.7 million distribution from the National Credit Union Share Insurance Fund, and significantly slowed the pace of new rules at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. In this podcast, Donovan outlines an agenda for 2019 that's designed to build on 2018 success. CUNA's advocacy objectives for 2019 include preserving the credit union tax status at the federal and state levels, reducing the regulatory burden, expanding and protecting regulatory powers, and enhancing information security. Please join me as Ryan Donovan outlines these objectives and shares his insight on how CUNA and America's credit unions can achieve them in the coming year. Ryan, I read in one of your recent emails where you said advocacy is a process. And in 2019, we're really going to be building on a successful year. Let's touch on some of the highlights. What are you most proud of accomplishing in 2018?
Thanks, Ron, for having me on the podcast. You know, when I think about 2018, what I'm most proud of is that our accomplishments this year validate our 360-degree advocacy strategy. You know, 4 years ago, we stopped looking at issues as legislative or regulatory issues, and we started looking at them as credit union issues. We started addressing them from all angles, and we tried to leverage the legislative branch to influence the executive branch and the executive branch to influence the legislative branch. And we started to saturate policymakers with our message both here in Washington and back home. And importantly, we began like we had never done before, working together, CUNA leagues and credit unions, to achieve advocacy success. So when you look at all of that which we accomplished in 2018, it was, I think, made possible by taking this 360-degree approach to advocacy and to issues. And so what does that mean? Well, like, take an issue like member business lending. In 2018, we achieved final victory on our 20-year battle to restore credit union business lending capacity. And it didn't come just by getting the Royce-Udall legislation enacted. It came through actually two separate policy actions. The first was NCUA modernizing their member business lending rule and excluding from the member business lending cap participations that were purchased from other credit unions. And we encouraged the agency to do that, and we successfully defended that action when the bankers took them to court over it. And then the second policy action was that we were able to get Congress to exclude from the member business lending cap loans made to 1-4 family non-owner occupied residential properties. Now, taken together, these two actions, these two changes in policy, help credit unions achieve more cap space, more business lending capacity than the former Royce-Udall legislation to raise the cap from 12.25% to 27.5% of assets. But we only get there because we stopped banging our heads against the wall of Congress for a singular legislative remedy, and we started to answer the question, what do credit unions need? The ability to do more business lending. So let's go out there and do that. Let's go out there and affect change to do that. And, you know, another place where we saw 360-degree advocacy win the day for credit unions was in the enactment of S-2155. This was the first major regulatory relief legislation enacted since 2006. And it included that 1-4 family provision that I just spoke about. And it also included amendments to the Dodd-Frank Act, one of the first bills that Congress has passed to amend the Dodd-Frank Act. And what was important about these provisions is that they serve to mitigate the adverse impact of a whole host of regulatory changes that took place in the first few years of the CFPB being in existence. We also got a provision in there that will protect credit unions' employees that report suspicion of elder abuse. It wasn't only a legislative effort. Yes, the bill became law, and we're very proud of that. But this came after years of pressuring the CFPB to take action on this issue. We used Congress to try to move the Bureau. And the support that we generated in Congress over the last several years was critical to getting this legislation through. It was as critical as going into this last Congress with a plan, putting our campaign for common sense regulation at the forefront of getting it done, having credit unions and leagues organize more than 2,000 meetings with policymakers, all of that working together in a 360-degree advocacy strategy was the reason that we were successful on S-2155. And then the third accomplishment that we're real proud of course, is the preservation of the credit union tax status, both at the federal level and at the state level. At the federal level, Congress did tax reform for the first time in 20 years. Well, actually longer, for the first time since 1986. And during that debate, not a single member of Congress made a speech or offered an amendment suggesting that credit unions should be taxed. It wasn't just something that happened in 2018 or 2017. We've been fighting this battle for a whole host of years, and we were successful during this effort. At the state level, it's a similar story. The leagues are our boots on the ground in the state capitals. They're defending the tax status every day against banker attacks that seem to be coming more often and more intense. And last year was no different. We had a very significant battle in Iowa, and we were able to be successful because we worked together and we took a 360-degree advocacy approach. So it's a long way to answer your question, but what I'm most proud of is that 2018 really validated that we've got the right advocacy strategy, and that sets us up, I think, in really good shape for 2019.
Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, in virtually every one of these instances that you speak of, these efforts are true grassroots efforts. I mean, from Capitol Hill all the way down to just pick any state and or choose any credit union branch, really. It's virtually a textbook for anybody who wants to do advocacy work in Washington. It's something that we really should be proud of.
If you ever want to know why we should advocate, I would tell you that, you know, probably the most important reason is if we don't, who will? There's a lot of voices in Washington and the state capitals that are willing to talk about credit unions. Not all of them are very friendly. A lot of them want us to go away. So if we aren't engaged in advocacy at a grassroots level, and throughout the spectrum, who's going to speak for credit unions?
Turning to 2019 and building on this success, what is the credit union advocacy agenda for the upcoming year?
Well, we've got a real exciting advocacy agenda for 2019. It reflects the needs of our membership, and it has been fine-tuned to the political environment in which we're operating. You know, we're always listening to credit unions as we develop this agenda. We actively go out to key stakeholder groups to assess the impact and the urgency of issues. Jim and I and others are on the road meeting with credit unions. We have our engagement consultants in the field. And all of that feedback goes into creating our advocacy agenda. We also do a lot of work to assess what Congress is going to look like. And of course, we know that in 2019, as the 116th Congress convenes, we're going to have a Congress that looks a lot different than the one that we've been working with currently. And that's going to present us with some challenges, but it's also going to present us with some opportunities. As we put together this agenda, we also worked with ACUL, the Association of Credit Union Leagues, to include a national state-level advocacy agenda as part of it. And that really reinforces the commitment on the part of both the leagues and CUNA to execute a common advocacy agenda. And it helps us know, you know, it gives us a guide where we can, as a national association, where we can provide some really impactful support for the league's efforts. Our agenda, and I'll describe it here in a second, you know, it also puts credit union members in the center, because when we talk to policymakers about the policies that they're working on, and we talk about credit union members, we win. And we win because credit unions exist to serve their members, and our agenda is designed to support that ability to serve the members. So what our members tell us is that they want us to reduce regulatory burdens so that credit union members have more access to efficient and affordable financial services provided by their credit unions. And they want us to expand and protect credit union powers and opportunities so that consumers and small businesses can more easily access credit union services that they need and demand. They want us to enhance information security to ensure that credit union member data is protected from cyber attack and data breach. And they want us to preserve the credit union income tax status, both at the federal level and at the state level, so that credit union members continue to enjoy not-for-profit cooperative financial services. So these are the things that credit unions tell us that they want us to focus our agenda on. And everything that we do as a CUNA League advocacy team, we can tie back to this agenda, whether it's our work with the CFPB to reduce regulatory barriers, or charter enhancement legislation we may take to Congress this year, or the data breach legislation that we'd like to see that will hold merchants to the same security standards as credit unions, and of course our work on tax. All of that flows back to this agenda.
Now, you mentioned the 116th Congress, and Congress is divided like never before. And remarkably enough, we've kind of united Congress in making a lot of these achievements. How is CUNA positioned for success in this divided Congress?
Well, I think we're pretty well positioned for 2019. Listen, there are going to be things that we can control and things that we can't control. And we spent a great deal of time in 2018 making sure that we've got some control as we go into the new Congress. We've returned a credit union majority to Congress. We invested $7 million in 388 candidates for Congress this last year. 91% of them won their election. And we weren't just picking safe seats. We played in 48 open seats, and we won 45 of them. We even defeated a member of Congress who, in a candidate survey, had questioned the credit union tax status. So our political activity, and really the fact that members of Congress know that there are real people behind it, just as we were talking about the grassroots, all of that helps position us very well in this next Congress. And when you sort of look at how that Congress is coming together in terms of the leadership, both in the Senate and the House, and particularly on the committees where we have the most interest, you can see a lot of strong support for credit unions. Senate Banking Committee Chairman Mike Crapo and House Financial Services Committee Chairman Maxine Waters, you know, a Republican and a Democrat. Crapo's from Idaho. Maxine Waters is from California. They don't have a lot in common. What they share in common is their strong support for credit unions. And I think that's the same for their ranking members. Sherrod Brown from Ohio, who's a Democrat, and Patrick McHenry, a Republican from North Carolina, are both also strong credit union supporters. And that's very helpful, because any legislation that we hope to get through in the next Congress is going to go through those committees. There's no question about it, though. Next year is going to present a really complicated legislative environment. But I think we start from a position of strength. And as I said, we're going to work to control what we can control.
Kathleen Craninger was confirmed December 6th as the new head of the renamed Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Can you outline some of the reforms that credit unions seek with this CFPB and where we stand with those?
Sure. So part of our agenda for next year is helping to achieve our vision for the Bureau under new leadership. We're very excited to get to work with the new director. And anytime you have somebody new coming into a position like this, the opportunity that you have is for them to bring a fresh perspective or a fresh look at everything. And certainly the work that the acting director, Mr. Mulvaney, did during his tenure will be of great benefit to Director Kraninger. One of the things that was done over the last year is that the Bureau put out, I think it was 13 requests for information. So they invited stakeholders to comment on various aspects of the agency with the intent of the new director taking the information that was collected and using that to reform the Bureau. So we're excited for that process to proceed. One of the things that the Bureau also did during the interim period that we hope will continue is they set up opportunities, new opportunities to listen to stakeholders. For a number of years when we were engaging with the Bureau, I think a lot of us felt like, yeah, they were in the room, but and they might have heard what they said, but heard what we said, but were they really listening? We're hopeful that under the new leadership, the Bureau will actually be listening to stakeholders. We'd like to see them slow the pace of new rules. That was certainly a theme during the Mulvaney year. There were no new rules proposed or implemented during 2018. And so hopefully the pace of new rulemaking will continue to be slow. But we would like for them to go back and fix some of the burdensome rules like HMDA, TILA, and RESPA. And we see on their rulemaking agenda that in 2019 they want to do a rewrite of the payday lending rule, and they'll also consider a rule on debt collection. We'll be very engaged in those processes. So that's within the Bureau. We would also like to see some significant reform to the Bureau. And where we focus our efforts there has to do with changing its structure from a single director to a multi-member bipartisan commission. Now, we live in a democracy, so it's not hard, I think, to see why a commission that has a bunch of different people on it that bring different perspectives might be preferable to a system that has a single person making all the decisions. But, you know, from our perspective, a commission's preferable for a number of reasons. One, it's more consistent with how other regulatory agencies are structured, namely the NCUA, the FDIC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, just to name a few. There's a great deal of desire, I think, from folks, particularly supporters of the CFPB, for the Bureau to be independent. Right now, the Bureau is not independent from anyone except for the minority political party. But if you had a bipartisan multi-member commission, you'd increase the Bureau's independence, because you would have a situation where it would be hard for a single person to greatly influence the outcome of policy produced by the agency. You know, a commission brings more voices to the table, and that generally produces better policy. It'll slow the regulatory pendulum. The swing of that regulatory pendulum has gone pretty wild as we move from the Obama years to the Trump years. We've got another presidential election in 2 years. Will it swing back? I don't know. But I do know that if there's a commission there, that swing will be that much less wild. And, you know, I think the best argument for a commission is that President Obama and Elizabeth Warren originally proposed it, and they were going forward with it until they got what they perceived to be a better offer. In fact, you know, both political parties have supported a commission before it was politically convenient for them to walk away from it. So now we've got a second confirmed director. We've got divided government and a presidential election on the horizon. So I can't think of a better time for Democrats and Republicans to come together and embrace this type of change for the Bureau so that it can stand for a long period of time in the interests of consumers.
So you are hopeful.
Oh, I am optimistic. But I know it's going to take a lot of work, and frankly, it's something that still may take a while. You referenced it earlier, Ron. Advocacy is a process, not an event. It's a marathon, not a sprint. I think we have we've got an opportunity to advance this notion in the next 2 years, but it's going to still take a lot of work to get it across the finish line.
Now, you mentioned the NCUA, and
And also, we talked about a process. What are our priorities in working with the NCUA in 2019?
Well, I think one of the first priorities at NCUA is we'd like to see the president nominate and the Senate confirm new members of the NCUA board. We've got a situation right now where Chairman McWater's term expires in August. Board member Metzger is serving on an expired term, and there's a vacancy. Now, the president's nominated Rodney Hood to replace Mr. Metzger. Mr. Hood is a former vice chair of NCUA. He's a Republican. That leaves us a spot for a Democrat member of the NCUA board. The president hasn't nominated anyone for that position just yet. And with Congress coming to an end, he's going to have to renominate Mr. Hood in the new year. The Hood nomination and whoever the president nominates for the vacant position will likely move in tandem, or at least history would suggest that they would move in tandem. So we're hopeful the president will nominate a Democrat for the board so that can happen. Then those individuals will get confirmed prior to, hopefully, Mr. McWater's term expiring in August. So that's when we think about NCUA, the first thing that I think about is we got to get the boards full. Because when you look at the list of things that we're working with NCUA on, a lot of it requires interaction at the board level. You know, for example, we think NCUA is going to propose a rule on alternative capital soon. They issued an advance notice of proposed rulemaking earlier this year. They got a lot of information from stakeholders. And they had a public briefing on the topic. So they're in a place in the rulemaking timeline for a proposed rule to come out and hopefully get finalized early next year. They're also working on a rule that would amend their appraisal requirements. We expect that to be finalized in 2019. They're working on an update to federal credit union bylaws. That's an open comment period right now until the middle of January. There are so many different things that the agency is working on. We've been trying to work with them on the FASB final standard on CECL to try to get that delayed and to try to get additional accommodations met. They recently reintroduced their regulatory relief and regulatory review agenda. So it's a pretty busy time over at NCUA right now.
And one thing we talked about a divided Congress, but one thing there is bipartisan support for is data security legislation, which always kind of seems to be like kind of a moving object just because it moves so fast. How can CUNA and credit unions take advantage of bipartisan support for data security legislation?
The data security issue is actually a pretty interesting one because so much, as you mentioned, divides Congress on partisan lines. This is the divisions in Congress on data security actually cut a little bit of a different way. They cut over committee jurisdiction. So I think that, you know, the first thing that we've got to figure out is how do we get past this problem of committee jurisdiction that's kept data security legislation from proceeding in the past. And, you know, I guess for better or for worse, the good news is there may be a path. And the path involves a debate that I think Congress is going to have over the next couple of years on data privacy regulations. And what they're really going to focus on is how do entities that hold consumer data use that data? How do banks and credit unions use that data to drive lending decisions? What are fintech companies doing with data that they acquire or that they collect from consumers? What are the social media companies doing with their data? All of that's going to come under congressional scrutiny next year. And it's really being driven not just by concerns that consumers may have regarding the use of their data, but the implementation of new data privacy regulations, both by the European Union and more recently in a law that was enacted in California last year that'll go into effect in about 3 years. Both those actions, I think, are going to drive a debate towards federal data privacy standards. And that may give us an opportunity to advance some data breach legislation. Now, to be sure, there's going to be some risk because I know credit unions are going to be resistant to new regulations or limitations on how they may use their member data, and we're gonna fight that. You can be certain about that. But it may give us the opportunity to advance data breach legislation, and you know, it's a pretty compelling and basic argument that that we're making, which is that the merchants that accept cards for payment ought to be held to the same security standards as the credit unions that issue the cards. That's what we're after in Congress. And like I said, I think that this Congress may be different. It may present us one of the better opportunities we've had to make progress on this issue.
Earlier, you talked about plans for a national state-level advocacy agenda. Can you tell me a little bit about those plans?
Sure. Well, you know, and I also mentioned that at the state level, the leagues are really the boots on the ground in state capitals. What CUNA does is we try to support their efforts. There's a whole host of ways that we do it, but as they work to reduce regulatory burden, as they're trying to expand their charters, enhancing information security and protecting their income tax status, CUNA serves as a clearinghouse, as a resource for research and other advocacy support for them. In our advocacy agenda, what we do is we work with the leagues through ACUAL to make sure that their efforts are reflected in our common agenda. And what they've told us that they're working on together this year is they want to combat the activism that we're seeing from certain attorneys general and progressive state legislatures to sort of fill a void that was created when former Director Cordray left the CFPB. Now we're seeing more litigation related to consumer protection laws. We're seeing changes in state law to that can present increased regulatory burden on credit unions. And so that is definitely on their radar screen to combat that. They want to try to help us pursue more federal charter enhancement legislation by changing state laws to permit more interstate branching so that state charters improve in their powers and their scope. That puts pressure on the federal government to act. They're also focused on getting legislatures and statewide officials, including attorneys generals, to pressure Congress to make it easier for credit unions and other financial institutions to bank cannabis businesses. They're going to pursue data security legislation at the state level, just as we're doing in Congress, in order to help bring about a federal solution. And then we're going to continue to support league efforts to repel banker attacks and other efforts to eliminate state credit union income tax statuses. So as you can see, the state component of our advocacy agenda aligns very strongly with the federal component.
And then coming back to Washington, it looks like there will be a new attorney general. There's currently an acting attorney general. What are the chances of the Department of Justice putting out a new rulemaking on the ADA website accessibility?
Well, we're hopeful that we're going to make some progress on this issue, and I should say some more progress on this issue, because in recent months we've seen a decline in the number of new lawsuits filed, which is positive. But, you know, still there are too many credit unions facing litigation. And of course, the threat of new litigation remains. You know, our goal is to end the predatory lawsuits, and there are a number of paths that we can get to achieve that goal. And yes, one of them is getting some new guidance or a rulemaking from the Justice Department. In addition to getting a new attorney general, perhaps in the near future, there is new leadership in the Office of Civil Rights at Justice, and we're engaged with that new leadership in that office. We're also working closely with the National Federation for the Blind. You know, I think if you polled credit unions, they would tell you that they want everyone who's eligible to be a member of the credit union to be able to access the credit union's website. And we want to get to a place where that is that's possible. And so we've met with several times the leadership of the National Federation for the Blind, and we're looking for ways to make sure that we're doing everything we can to promote accessibility while at the same time putting an end to these predatory lawsuits. So I'm hopeful that we'll make some more progress on this issue in 2019.
And then I would be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the tax status. So I know it's an ongoing priority for credit unions. It's something we discuss every year. Where do you see the next threats to the tax status coming from? I mean, that's always on your radar. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
We're always going to be engaged on the income tax status in Washington. The good news is I think that in 2019, the threat from a federal level is a little bit lower. There may be some tax correction legislation or some minor changes to the tax code. I don't foresee an effort to do comprehensive tax reform in 2019 or in this next Congress. The greater threat is actually going to come, I think, at the state level. And really there's, I think, two drivers of this. One is, of course, the bankers and their state-based associations. And the other is that, you know, many state budgets are in really tough shape, and lawmakers and administrations, governors, are looking for ways to balance budgets. And so they're looking at things that, frankly, they may not have considered in the past. What CUNA's doing is we're working to support state league efforts. We do this by helping with research, with messaging, with advertisements, social media, coalition building, media relations, and sometimes even lobbying support. And internally, we've taken a couple of steps to help boost our capacity here. We've reorganized our National Advocacy Fund, which is a fund that we use to help provide financial support to these efforts. And we reorganized our State Government Affairs function this past year to be able to provide more support for the league efforts. One of the things we also did this fall, Ron, is we got all of our state team, our political team, and our consultants together, and we ran through a tabletop exercise that was meant to stress test our capabilities. So I feel good about where CUNA and the leagues are in this discussion. I know that we're going to have fights on our hands. We're acutely aware of some states where we know we're going to be engaged in this issue. But for credit unions, what I tell them is we just need to keep telling our story. We need to continue to make sure that our message is focused on how credit unions are serving their communities and the impact that they're having in those communities. And we need to continue to remind lawmakers that historically, the credit union tax status hasn't been based on the size of credit unions or powers of credit unions. In fact, the credit union tax status has been based on the structure of credit unions as not-for-profit financial cooperatives and the mission to promote thrift and provide access to credit for provident purposes. And the structure and the mission haven't changed one bit. And to the extent that credit unions have changed in terms of their size and their powers, I'd say so has the banking industry. It looks a lot different than it did in 1930. So do credit unions. But structure and mission remain the same, and that's the basis of the tax status. So I think we'll be in good shape there too.
Yeah, I know they never catch us unaware and they never catch us unprepared. And that goes for CUNA as well as the credit unions in all the respective states and the leagues. So that said, Ryan, I thank you for your time and we'll check in with you sometime in the middle of the year and hopefully we'll be talking about more success. Thanks again.
Thanks, Ron. I appreciate being a part of this.
Thanks for listening to the CUNA News Podcast. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play.